to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, hitting firewalled hoe. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ leave you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, SIPs, SIPs. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
I have no idea what to say to start the show off, so I'm just going to start the show off. This is episode 63 of Binary Revolution Radio. I am Stank Dog, and we are coming to you September 21st, Tuesday, 2004. Again, episode 63, and our returning co-host with us today is our good friend, Acidus, back on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And you've got some really interesting stories, because you've had a whirlwind, you're in the middle of a whirlwind month, I guess.
Into the middle of a whirlwind month.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it doesn't get any lighter with October either, does it?
No.
Yeah, so anyway, we'll come to that in a second, but let's take care of a little housekeeping off the top, like we always do. And just briefly mention, I'm not officially announcing anything yet, but I just want to give everybody a heads up that we are going to be switching our IRC server. We're going to be switching our IRC channel to another server. And actually, we have already registered channel BenRev on Dalnet. Now, we've been on Espernet all this time because that's where Rant Radio was, but we are going to be moving to Dalnet very soon. We've already registered it, registering accounts, et cetera, et cetera. So if anybody wants to check out Dalnet, channel BenRev, that should be coming up soon. And again, when we make an official announcement, we'll put it up on the website, we'll change all the links on the website, and we'll probably put a bot up on the old site temporarily and route people over. But right now we're still doing a little bit of testing on Dalnet. We've got some ideas for some bots over there, like to download the show, some F-serves and stuff like that to download episodes of the show, things like that, do some lookups to some of our other projects. So, we're going to be moving to Dalnet soon. So I wanted to talk about that. I think I mentioned that before, but I just wanted to bring it to light again. And I think probably we should jump into a little email. What do you say?
Shoot.
All right, let's play our intro theme music here, our email theme music. And on to the first email. First email here comes from Mrs. Jonah. Hey, it's me, Brittany. My husband left last night. Come check out my online profile. If you like my sexy profile, we can meet up. Wait a minute. Excuse me. Sorry about that. I'm sorry about that to the listeners out there. That one slipped through. I don't know what that was all about. Let's just pretend that didn't happen. Okay, can we wipe that out?
Yeah. I mean, you're damn right, Stank. That Brittany chick's mine.
Dude, I'm sorry. I don't know how that happened. Let's start again. Let's pretend. Okay, here we go into the email section. Okay.
Into the email.
This email I got is from Mrs. Harlan. Mm-hmm. Hey, it's me, Kelsey. Husband on business trip. With my online profile, you can come and chat with me if you're looking for a sexy relationship. Hold on. This is a mistake. Let me just forward this to Mrs. Jonah. All right, let me forward that to Mrs. Jonah from earlier. I think maybe they're trying to communicate with each other, and somehow I got in the middle.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's all about. Let me...
You can man in the middle then, though I don't know if you'd want to.
Yeah, sight unseen? No, that's tricky. Sight unseen on the internet, that's... Yeah, that's bad news. That's just bad news. All right, let me try this again. Now, this next email, this is from Mrs. Pryor. This can't be... Okay, this has got to be legitimate.
Oh, that sounds wholesome.
Yeah. Hayes, it's me, Taylor. My husband doesn't give me much attention. I have a profile online, which you can browse. Okay. Oh, wait a minute. What the hell is going on here?
Gotta love spam.
Every single one of these is Mrs. Blank. Mm-hmm. And then it says, hey, it's me, whatever, first name. My husband doesn't...
Yeah, is missing slash dead slash has no, you know, whatever.
What, did everybody's husband in the world walk out of their life at the same time? I mean...
No.
I'm tempted to excuse myself from the show and go knock on the next door neighbor's house just to see if their husband's home. Something's fishy going on here. This is like, we need to just, all these hoes need to join forces and make like this Justice League of lonely women or something.
It'll be like a social network for whores, though.
Exactly.
Like Orchid, but for the lonely housewife.
Oh, whoretics. Okay. You know what? Joking aside, I do have one serious email I did want to bring up on the show today.
Okay.
Although, I should file these for later reference, just in case. You know, always nice to have a backup plan. No, I have one actually serious email I did want to read, and it is from Battery Man. There's no misses, nothing here. This is from Battery Man. Sent me a pretty long email. I'm just going to read a little bit of it here, the first part of it here. It says, I have been listening to your show since number 25, and have been, and we're on 63 today, so that's been quite a while, and have been looking around for other shows like yours. RFA was the first one I found. I usually burn, RFA, of course, is Radio Freak America, which I co-hosted with Dual Parallel, along with, I think their most well-known is Bland Inquisitor and Dual Parallel on that show, but a host of other people on there as well. RFA was the first one I found. I usually burn a CDRW with all the shows, parentheses, RFA, Off the Hook, Tech This, In the Now, Default, BenRev, The Linux Show, Wireless, TechRadio.com, Tech Talk. It's a lot of shows, man.
Internet I didn't know radio. There were that many.
Yeah, internet radio is blowing up, and he left off a lot of them. I mean, you've got Infonomicon. He's not Uberlito. There's a ton of shows on here that, you know.
There's a show called Uberlito.
Uberlito by Kizzle, and actually, yeah, that's Uberlito is Kizzle's doing some really cool stuff. I was actually going to shout him out towards the end, and I will. I'll talk about some stuff, but Hacker Media. Mm-hmm. Hacker Media is his site. HackerMedia.net, I believe, is his site. HackerMedia.net, and it's kind of like a central place where you can find out about all of these shows. So, Battery Man, there's a good site to get started. You say you're looking for more. Go to HackerMedia.net, and you'll find links to a bunch of others. Anyway, let's get back to the email. Many are just reading the news. BenRev and RFA go farther and talk about in some detail. You and Duel have the best rants, and yes, I have some rants on occasion, and ideas for stuff. Tom and Daryl do a good job when they get to a good subject. They sometimes talk about Linux. Their specialty is satellite dishes. One topic was about channels that DirecTV have that are not for the public. I'm starting to collect interesting places that have payphones. One is an old Nike missile base above Encino. These will eventually be added to the payphone database. One of your recent shows inspired me to go and play with Telnet and connect up to different services. I might go and try to document what I have discovered. The RFCs are easy to find, and they should be able to give me enough information. Keep the show going. Give us more ideas on what we can go and play with. My next thing will be to check my web server with Nikto. And that's just a part of it. He had a lot of other good stuff in there. I thank everybody for listening. Everybody that sends in an email that they were interested enough to send in an email, I appreciate that. That's very touching that people care enough to do that. So thank you very much for listening, and I hope we do pique your interest on a number of topics. You know, that's what my goal is hopefully when the radio show is done, that you don't sign off the computer, that you go out and look some of this stuff up and research it and find out more about it.
Right.
Now, he also mentioned something else, and maybe you can back me up on this, but talking about the RFC, he says the RFCs are easy to find and should be able to give you enough information. Absolutely.
Hey, man, you know, I was actually just about to say, I think the last time I was on the show, we were talking about the first time you telnet to an SMTP server and send that first mail. I was walking past, I've got a friend who's a TA for an early Java class at Georgia Tech, and their kind of group project, it was like a two-week project, they had to write a news group reader, which sounds kind of complicated.
Right, it does sound, and I'm sure it was, but...
No, it's actually surprisingly easy. It's and in fact, what they had is they said for people to learn the protocol, they actually said, you know, just telnet directly to the mail server and look at the RFC to tell you what command you use. You know, you use, like, you know, list to get a list of all the news groups. You use group and the group name to get a list of, you know, the headers for the article. And then you do, like, the article and, like, the ID to get the article. It's actually really simple. And so, yeah, I mean, I highly encourage people, you know, go look at RFCs. I mean, MIT has a big repository of them. I mean, you can find all the RFCs. They're easy. And just, you know, telnet to some of these ports, you know, learn networking. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and you know what? Like you said, they are publicly accessible. Mm-hmm. Every internet protocol, every, just about, you know, every RFC that you can imagine, is publicly available. You can do a little bit of Googling and find the protocols and the details. Sometimes, even for not... I mean, we're not talking only about... Okay, I'm sorry. Let me back up and find the correct words here. We're not talking about... This is not a Linux thing. This is not an open source thing. This is a standards thing.
Yeah, this is a standards thing.
This is about internet standards, protocol standards, and stuff that are... You know, the W3C consortium, all these different groups, the ISO standards, stuff like that, that are published so that the goal is to make them public so that people can write software applications around these standards.
That are compliant, yeah.
Right. Instead of, for example, Microsoft making their own browser that doesn't support XYZ. You know, they can choose to, because when Microsoft's first generation of browsers came out, they didn't support a lot of this HTML standards. They were trying to force some of their own. You know, there were some... If you remember back in the days, I'm certain you do, where it said, you know, this site only viewable with Netscape, or this site only viewable with Internet Explorer.
Yes.
Remember back in the day, you used to have to do browser detection to see which one they had and customize the page because they would render the HTML differently, or some HTML would not be rendered by Internet Explorer. They use different tags and different type of markup.
Exactly.
So they chose not to acknowledge the standards. Well, luckily for us, so many other great applications did, you know, and we now have other options. And gosh, you know what? This would have been a great story if I would have thought I was coming off on going into this tangent, but I read somewhere just earlier this week that the market share for Internet Explorer has been dropping quite a bit, especially in the past year.
What was it? Firefox went from like 7% to 17%.
Right.
Here, and there was something on Flashdot, you know, just like a day or two ago that was saying that so Mozilla 1.0, or excuse me, Firefox 1.0, like the pre-release is out.
The PR, right.
Final
right.
release candidate, whatever. And the Mozilla Foundation was expecting 1 million downloads in 10 days. They were hoping they got 1 million downloads in 4 days.
Wow.
Everyone's liking it. It's taken off. And
oh, it's awesome.
I'm glad because it's going to force Microsoft to innovate. I mean, hell, look at Internet Explorer, and how is it any different than 1998? It's not. Mm. It's crap. And so it's nice to see another player in the industry.
Yep. Yeah, it's very, and I love the way they do, and I also like the fact that they don't use the word plugins because that's so cliche. I like the way they do extensions.
Yes.
They're very, very smooth the way they've done extensions, and when I upgraded to the 1.0 PR, the preview release, all of the extensions that I had, it automatically checked to see if there were new updated versions available, automatically will install them. You know, if you, of course, approve it, it doesn't automatically do anything. Like, when you say automatically in Microsoft terms, it means one thing. When you say automatically in everybody else's, it's something else.
Microsoft terms, it means that little checkbox that comes up says, always trust content from Microsoft.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I always do, of course.
Yes, of but course. That, yeah, that, well, you should.
That's just
me. They know more than you do.
Exactly. Who am I to argue with Microsoft?
Yes, exactly.
You know? So, anyway, yeah, that's a very good point, and the fact that he knows that and mentioned that in his email is a very, very good start. Someone who really is eager. I mean, if you're motivated enough to find out something, anything that you want to know how to do, that's a great starting point. If, like, you know, people come in the forums or people instant message or email me, how do I go about writing this? How do I go about writing my own spider? Like, I wrote that article on spiders and robots.
Yeah.
How do I write my own spider? Well, you know what? Go out there. There are RFCs that will explain all the HTML tags, all the access, how do you interact with a server, all these commands that you can go in and you can write your own spider, for example, in just about any script you want, just by following those things. Like you said, telnetting for the news groups, for example, is telnetting and issuing a certain command.
Yes.
You know, all that is publicly available.
And so, that's what these programs do under the covers. I mean, your web browser, when you say, get me this page, it essentially telnets to port 80 and issues a get and then the name of the HTML file. And you can do the very same thing, but instead of using web browser, just telnet to it. Telnet, IP name or, name of the server and space 80. And you're now a web browser. Congratulations.
That's all there is to it in the most rudimentary way, of course, absolutely. Without going into MIME headers and yada, 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 But and also I'm just to pimp out. He mentioned his site in this email too. He's got some pretty interesting, some old telephone recordings and stuff available on his site, and that site is telephoneentertainment.com. Telephone-entertainment.com. So he's got some old phone recordings if you're into that sort of thing that you can check out. So yes, Battery Man, thank you very much for the email. I appreciate it, and that's going to do it for the mailbag today, for this week, I should say. And
you need a spam assassin on that mailbag.
Yeah. Actually, I do run. Honestly, those were in my. They got picked up by the spam filter. I just couldn't help but notice them.
I got those very same, and actually, I need to train spam assassin better or something. But yeah. Those got through. Apparently, it felt I needed a woman or something.
Yeah, you know what I've been getting? You might have been getting this a lot lately, too, where the subject line is, hey, our meeting is scheduled for.
Yeah, I've gotten, and it's in military time. No one I know uses military time.
Exactly.
That's how I can tell it's.
But that gives them positive points on the old evaluator of whether it's spam or not. They lose a bunch of points for the word Viagra, but they gain a bunch of points for meeting,
Yep.
So they're offsetting it. So I've been getting a few of those sneak through. But, I go through before I do delete all those old automatically deleted spams, I'll browse through the trash just to make sure legitimate stuff didn't get filtered.
Right.
So, I caught them in there and thought it was funny that they were the same exact email with different Mrs. Blank, fill in the blank. So, somebody's out there sending all these, and a bunch of people are. Damn spammers.
Yeah.
Hope it was worth it. I hope they all... I'm not going to go into a spammer rant.
Another rant for another time.
Exactly. It's not even a rant. It's very simple. Spammers are scum of the earth.
Yes.
They really are. They really are. I mean, come on. I'm a lonely housewife. Come to my site. My husband is away. Well, come on.
I mean, look at Usenet, right? You have all these you have all these news groups that are essentially unreadable now because of all the spam they get.
Yeah.
It's just a shame. They're just destroying it.
I don't know. They're scum of the earth. That's all there is.
What we really need to do, not that I'm advocating virus writing, but if someone were to write a virus that looks specifically for these mass mailing programs they use and, trash their disk, that would be nice.
Yeah, there's... Yeah, without directly supporting or saying something like that, all I can say is that I very much believe in vigilante justice. That's all I'm going to say.
A totally unrelated topic. Not endorse again. I just like vigilante justice.
Just on a completely random note, I'm all for that. See, to me, that is true civil disobedience. Not this other anarchist breaking windows. You're right.
Yeah.
Let me back up.
We're going to go off on those bastards from, Hope and DEF CON.
I think they've pretty much spoken for themselves enough that people...
We have nothing to add.
Believe me, I've gotten some... I've spoken out on the show in the past, and I've gotten some comments and some attacks of my own from some of these people. Laughable, some of them.
Yeah.
But, I've gotten some repercussions myself, so... I think it's pretty clear what my opinion is. But anyway, let's go into something fun. Let's go into the show and tell part of the show and talk about what we've been working on.
Excellent.
You, since the last time you're on the show, was what, a month ago?
Yeah.
A little over a month ago?
Or so.
Mine's pretty quick, so I'll go ahead and start. Because I have family in town. I have some family in town, so I've been spending family time. I've been doing a whole lot of computer stuff. I am working on some projects that I mentioned last week. Actually, ZeroDB and I were up to like 2 or 3 in the morning all weekend long working on one of these projects, and specifically that's PHP-based. Nick84 actually wrote a lot of PHP code, and we were going in and trying to manipulate it a little bit and working with it. So being that I don't know PHP very well, I gave myself a crash course, or he and I, we gave each other a crash course figuring it out on the speakerphone for hours at a time, going, hey, do you see this? What the hell does that do? And that was really fun. That was really fun to be on the phone with somebody, and we're both hacking at the same time and going, hey, I'm going to change this. Watch what happens. You know, that's really fun.
Yeah.
That was just an absolute blast. So, yeah, crash course in PHP, and I feel pretty comfortable with the fundamentals of it now, which helps a lot. And again, spending time with the family and doing some stuff at work, general work database stuff that I do. I have learned a lot in SQL Server 2000 as well. Probably nothing worth talking about in the show, but I'm always learning more about that as I spend more time with it, as it should be. And I want to wrap up at least one of these, probably both of these projects, before Freaknik, which is October 21st. So I guess we can segue to you with the Freaknik concept, because I know we said before you're going. We're definitely going to hook up when we get up there along with some other people, but I've never been to Freaknik before.
Freaknik is going to be a blast. I think I was pimping it actually the last time I was on the show.
Absolutely, yeah, I'm sure you were, but I mean, we can never pimp it enough. It's only a month away now, and
yep.
Back then when you were on, there was not a list of speakers yet.
Yes.
And they have put a list of speakers up now, and I was already looking at them. I'm looking very forward. Like, some things that interest me on the fringe that I'm not really into, I would probably never sit down. Like, for example, I think somebody was doing a hacking the Xbox.
Hmm.
Now, that's not something that I have ever really thought about doing or having time to do, but I very much am interested in seeing what other people have done with it. So I'm very much looking forward to that. Let's see, there was some do-it-yourself hardware that I was very much looking forward to.
That guy, because he's a friend of mine. It's a guy named Bodburn.
Yeah, that I'm very much looking forward to.
He's a really cool guy. Met him really for the first time at the last Freaknik and hung out with him a lot. He's awesome. I think it's bodburn.net. Just type Bodburn into Google. Guy rules. We were up till like 4 o'clock in the morning just talking about stuff. So.
Well, I'm glad that you I'm glad to hear your endorsement, because that is probably the one I was looking most forward to as far as reading the topic and the description.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you mention and you endorse him, I'm sure that it'll be a good presentation too. So I'm very much looking forward.
I believe he's actually one of the first speakers, isn't he?
You know what? I have the site still open.
I haven't seen the
Friday. Yes, you're right. Dolomite with the welcome message, the welcome thing, and then he is the first speaker Friday at 12:30.
Yeah, please.
We have to go to lunch like Friday, like 10:30 or 11 or something, so we can get back.
Yeah.
Or maybe eat at the hotel. But anyway, yeah, there's a lot of other good stuff in here. There's an asterisk development box. I like to watch that, because everything I've learned as far as that goes is from Not Theory, who's just brilliant at that. I'd like to see what this someone else presents.
They've given talks at not only Freaknik but also InterZone, and every time I've seen it, I've just been it impresses me so much.
Really,
it's an excellent project, and everyone says, yeah, I believe it's at asterisk.org. I don't know. Actually, I've got a sticker, actually some swag they gave out at InterZone. Yeah, asterisk.org. The open source PBX.
Yeah, and actually, Not Theory and I did a complete show with the topic being PBXs and specifically asterisk. I guess it was 2 or 3 episodes ago.
Really? I'm going to have to
really,
get that.
Yeah, really good stuff. And I'm telling you, he knows his stuff, man. Not Theory is leet! Now Freaknik here. Yeah, let's start with Freaknik, and then, because you also did something else really cool we want to talk about. But Freaknik, for example, now, I noticed that there's also some emphasis, I don't know if I say emphasis, but there's some gaming events that go on at Freaknik as well.
I believe they're doing that this year.
Oh, that's something new then?
So, at Freaknik, they normally have a room set up. Normally the Nashville, because it's held in Nashville, Tennessee. Normally the Nashville Lug is there doing an install fest. Normally there's a room for gamers. I mean, normally it hasn't really been a big thing. Normally at any con, there's kind of a room where people can, you know, hook up machines, use the network, you know, trade files back and forth. Are they doing a structured gaming thing this year?
I thought I read something. Let's see. We've got several people working on and organizing gaming this year.
Yeah, so they might be doing, like, a gaming ladder or some other stuff.
Yeah, that might be something. That's broadening the base of people that might, you know, because there's a lot of cross interest there.
Yes.
A lot of gamers that are into hacking, a lot of hackers that are into gaming. So I think that's kind of a cool thing. And what else, you know, what else is going on? What else is, certainly you've got to have some good Freaknik stories.
Yeah, well, I really got to enjoy Freaknik this last time. The first time I went, I was giving a talk, and due to some prior arrangements, I wasn't able to stay very long. But this last time I really went, it was excellent. I mean, there are only about 300 or 400 people there. There's a single track of speaking, so you don't have to worry about missing any other talks you want. It's in Nashville. So you've got, which is pretty much just a little college town. I mean, you've got the stadium there where some NFL team plays, but you've got Vanderbilt. It very much has a college town feel. And you just have a lot of really cool people together talking. They rent out the top floor of this hotel. So you've got the penthouse, which is really nice. You've got a good view of the city. And it's just a nice little group. Some of the talks they had last year, they had, stuff on, like, car computers. So they had, like, 6 or 7 really nice pimped-out cars, be them, you know, Miata sports cars or, you know, like, SUVs and stuff with, like, MP3 players and, like, in-dash LCDs. I mean, so if you're into that, that was really cool. Alanka's a real cool chick. She's a game developer out in the Midwest, and she cracks cryptography in her spare time.
Did I read a story? There was some art...
Yes.
Some art project that had some cryptography. I don't remember the story exactly.
This is, like, so cool. This is, like, Indiana Jones-ish. It's awesome. So there's this sculptor guy. I want to say his name is David Sanborn, but I might be mistaken. And he has done all of this art that has incorporated cryptography and, like, the Cold War and, like, KGB and, like, Nazis and, it's like, secret documents. And so he had one sculpture in North Carolina, I believe at UNC, that was called the Krillic Projector, which was like this cylinder with all these Krillic letters, or I might be saying that wrong, the Russian letters.
Cyrillic.
Cyrillic, yes, the Cyrillic Projector. In the center of kind of like this outside atrium type thing, amphitheater, and there was this rotating cylinder of these Russian letters with a light inside, and it was an encrypted KGB document, and she cracked that and got on Slashdot a while ago. And she's been working on a sculpture called Kryptos, which is in which is at Langley, the CIA headquarters. And she actually cracked. This is a cool way I can loop this back to Freaknik. She cracked all these codes. It got famous, and the CIA actually invited her out to give a talk at Langley. And she did it on the condition that she could take rubbings and stuff of this sculpture. It's another one of Sanborn's sculptures. And obviously only CIA people can get at it because it's on CIA headquarters, you know, grounds. And you can't just walk right in. It's in kind of this atrium outside the cafeteria. And she actually gave a talk at Freaknik last year about cryptography and about the crypto sculpture and how, you know, they've cracked like 3 parts of it. There are 4 parts. And it's crazy. And this is what I mean by it's like Indiana Jones-esque, because there's like Sanborn has these other sculptures and they reference each other, and like some of the sculptures have, you know, like lodestones in them, so they're magnetic and they, you know, they don't point to true north-south, and other ones have like, you know, encrypted GPS coordinates, which when you decoded them actually pointed to another sculpture, which they cracked, and it had, you know, reference to, you know, Kryptos again, and so it's like this modern-day treasure hunt. It's so cool.
Wow,
but she gave a talk at Freaknik last year, and actually the way Alanka got her start is every year at both Freaknik and now at Interzone, the original organizer of Freaknik was this guy named Johnny X, and he makes the Freaknik code, which is normally this, you know, it's just a piece of, you know, 8.5 by 11 filled with gibberish, and it's normally codes inside codes inside codes, you know, you like Lot 13, the first, 30 characters. Lot 13 is you just rotate the letters, 13 letters forward.
Right.
And it would say, you've got the first step, but it gets harder from here. And then you'll notice it's a UU encoded file. UU encoding is a way of taking binary and, writing it as ASCII. And so it was like a UU encoded file, which was actually a GIF. And so when you actually displayed the GIF, it showed a picture, and inside the GIF picture, using stenography, which is hiding information inside pictures, there was some data, and then you cracked that. And so the Freakonic codes are always very intricate, and Johnny X has now gone on to organize the Interzone Conference in Atlanta, so they're now Interzone codes. But Alanka got her start actually cracking these Freakonic codes, and you can still find, if you search for Alanka or Alanka at AOL.com, that's
And I think she has a site, E-L-O-N-K-A, Elonka.com.
Yes, I was just about to try to get that, yeah. So, and she actually has, a big list of, a walkthrough of one of the Freakonic codes. So you can, it's not just okay, here's how you solve it. But it's it explains cryptography techniques. It explains all these cool, software packages you use. I mean, it's really a nice introduction to cryptography for the layperson. And she's just a cool chick. I don't know if she's talking this year, but she will certainly be there. If Freakonic, it's so cool. It's just a lot of cool people from, the Midwest and SC2600. It's a great little con. So if you don't like DEF CON or, some of these other cons because they're so big and commercial, Freakonic, Interzone, some of these other ones are definitely up your alley.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. Now, and we have talked about Freakonic before, so let's move on to something that I think is even cooler because, we were trying to get you back on the show last couple weeks, but this last week especially, you were at something very cool out in the West Side. So why don't you talk about this, what was it called, Foo?
It was called the Foo Camp. Foo stands for Friends of O'Reilly. And the whole reason they called it that is they wanted to have a bar at this event and have it say Foo Bar, which, in fact, I took a picture of it. So the Foo Camp is neat. O'Reilly Publishing, the guys that do all the animal books, they throw a conference kind of semi-annually. They did one last year in October. They just did one in Europe. It's an invitation-only conference.
I was going to say, so why don't we hear about this conference?
Yeah, it's an invitation-only conference. And it's pretty selected. I very much felt like a small fish in a small pond with lots of big fish. So to give you an example of the type of people who were invited to this, Larry Page, the co-founder of Google, the editor-in-chief of Wired Magazine, all the top editors at O'Reilly, Fyodor, who writes Nmap.
Who was also at Hope.
Yes, who was also at Hope.
I met briefly at Hope, and I really wanted to talk to him more. Did you speak to him much?
Yes, in fact, I stayed up a couple nights talking with him. He's just an excellent... the fact that he actually knew who I was kind of cool. And it was just a very small group of about 200 people. And like I said, it's invitation only, and it's completely an unstructured conference. The O'Reilly kind of put up a wiki that everyone used. And O'Reilly pretty much gave everyone food, drinks, and shelter, and set up a wireless network and let everybody else do whatever they wanted. The con kind of self-organized. People, quickly, developed schedules. Someone put up, a big wall chart, and everyone would sign up for slots. People organized into panels. There were some folks from the EFF there, who, got together with other lawyers and did a panel on, internet law. There were some people who... did RFID that I got together with, and we did a little talk. There was just a wide range of folks there, and it really was unlike anything I had been to. Excellent food. I was eating blackened salmon the first night, barbecue ribs the second night. There was an open bar. They probably went through, a couple hundred bottles of wine over the course of the weekend. And people just, the O'Reilly campus is beautiful. It's about 50 miles north of San Francisco. And it's these three big office buildings, but they're not really office buildings. They look more like lodges in ski lodges. And so they, on the top floor of one of them, is just empty office space. So people, it literally was like a camp out. You brought a sleeping bag. You could either sleep inside, or people were actually camping outside in the apple orchard behind O'Reilly. They had a big grassy area. There was a guy there who built his own Segway from scratch.
Oh, you know what? I read that article about somebody doing it. It's probably the same guy. And
Trevor. I'm forgetting his last name. He was really cool.
Yeah, that's very ingenious.
There were just a wide range of people, and I just stayed up all night. It was a great experience because I got to talk to a lot of the best and brightest in these different industries. Tim O'Reilly, the guy who runs O'Reilly Publishing, as he says, you know, just get a lot of smart people together and give them resources and see what happens. And so you had all sorts of people, you know, talking about new standards, new ways to do RSS. You had people just getting together, networking, and talking. I met some great people. I will actually meet up with them again next week. The week of the month of fun never ends.
Man, yeah, you're just... And like we said, it's a whirlwind month for you. It really is.
It was. The whole reason I got invited to that O'Reilly Publishing was from my work with Stripe Snoop. It had gotten on SourceForge, and then I'd gotten an email from Tim O'Reilly saying, you know, hey, we're throwing this event. Please come out. It was the best, you know, plane ticket I've ever spent. And it's funny because I've never been to California before, and I just went to California. I've got this week back here. I'm trying to do some stuff for classes at Tech, and I'm actually back out to the West Coast next week.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I called you, and you were literally looking over the beach.
Yes, I was. You gave me a call.
You were on the cell phone trying to block the wind blowing off the beach.
It's Sebastopol is the place where O'Reilly is, and it's 50 miles north of San Francisco. So I flew up a day early to just hang out in San Francisco, you know, taking the sights. I'd never seen the city. And you gave me a call at about 5 o'clock my time, or, you know, West Coast time, and I'm sitting looking at the Bay Bridge, which goes from Oakland to San Francisco. I'm just sitting right on the beach, or, well, it's not even a beach there, it's just a pier, sitting on these things, taking a breather, and sure enough, my phone rings. I'm like, whoa, it's calling me. it was nice to take in the city.
I've never been to the West Coast either. I would definitely love to visit it sometime.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's San Francisco. I swear to God, you literally can go uphill both ways when you're trying to go somewhere. It was crazy, but a lot of good pictures, a lot of good times. Met up with some friends of mine who are now out there. Some people from the Yak.net crew, Strick and others. So that was nice.
Cool.
And I'm going to TourCon. You can see that at tourcon.org, I believe, or just type TourCon into Google. That's TOOR Con. It's kind of a privacy and security conference that's held in San Diego every year. A friend of mine, Mike Lynn, is giving a talk and knew the person who's running it and suggested to him that they invite me out. They had an open spot. So I'm flying back out to San Diego, to San Diego, never been there before, on Thursday, next Thursday. Actually, so like 5 days from now, 4 days from now. You know, fly out a day early so I can take in the city and then go to the conference.
Very, very cool. Well, let's see. How do we segue here?
How do we segue?
You met the guy from Google, and that is actually what inspired our main topic for today.
Mm-hmm.
And that topic is fishing. I'm sorry, unless you were. I didn't want to cut you off there. If you still had.
Oh, that's fine. I mean, it's
you're. I know that you need to get to sleep because you're back in town for a week to take care of your personal things you need to take care of before you're taking off again.
I do.
So we need to get this thing out. Let's see. Actually, let me check here. How are we doing?
We're doing good.
We're good. We're good. And our main topic today is a pretty basic one, actually. It's a pretty simple one, and that is the topic of fishing.
Yes.
And fishing not like a fishing pole and bait and worms, but fishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, fishing.
Yes.
So the reason is because, like I said, Google, right now, I guess there is a Gmail phishing going on. There's a Gmail being sent around, forwarded around, phishing for people's information. And I thought that, A, we'd talk about this and its effects, And they're more than you think. It's not as simple as, you know, getting someone's information and that's the end of it. It's a little bit more widespread than that. So I thought we'd talk about some of the effects of phishing, but also just explain what phishing is in general.
Right.
And like I said, it's not exactly rocket science.
No.
You know, it's not like this is, yes, I mean, it'd be naive to say it's not somehow related to hacking. There is a little bit of, it's kind of a social engineering trick, I guess.
Yep.
I guess you could classify it as that. Generally, these days, when you hear the term phishing, it's more mass. It's not about hitting one person up for information to get their docs. It's about sending out mass mailings, and that's usually what is referred to as emails that go out pretending to be someone that they're not.
Yeah,
and trying to get your information.
It's as a lot like spam has gotten very commercialized. You know, the spam and the virus communities are coming together now. Kind of the phishing community has becoming much more commercialized. I mean, you know, back in the day, I remembered phishing AOL accounts like in the mid-90s, you know. but that was just, you know, for fun. But now you have people who are going out collecting information, you know, using it to acquire social security numbers, steal identities, ring up massive amounts of fraud. I mean, and they're using it to make money.
yeah, and that's just bad news. It's just bad news, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, phishing is basically social engineering someone to get access specifically to an account. You normally email them and say, like, hi, you know, such and such. I am, you know, Bill from tech support, and, you know, our server went down, blah, blah, whatever. You know, we lost your account information. Please email, you know, please reply with your most recent password, et cetera, so we can, you know, update our database, and which is complete crap. But
right, and, you know, mostly, you know, from credit cards. You see it a lot from people claiming to be from credit card companies and stuff like that, saying they need to verify something about you.
Exactly. And you should never, the credit card, they will never, well, first of all, if you ever get something like that, you should say, you know, if it's over the phone, I've had people call me and try to fish me. I mean, and I, you know, had a nice little fun adventure tracing their number and stuff and giving that to the cops. But, you know, first of all, if you ever get something like that on the phone, ask them for a number to call them back at. Now, I'm sure Lucky or some of your other hosts, you know, all about PBX manipulation, and sometimes simply dialing someone's number, you're not actually getting that number.
Right.
Same thing with email. Somebody might say, oh, email this address back, and it might look authentic, but, you know, you should always try to call the company directly. Don't ever do this electronically.
Right, right. And they should never, ever have a reason. You should...
Yeah, they should...
Anytime...
Anyway.
Yeah, anytime anybody... This is a rule of thumb. Anytime anybody asks you for your password, you should immediately be suspicious.
Yeah, it's. I mean, come on. How AOL lost your account information? Then how do they know to email you if they lost, you know, a tape or a backup of all this account information? That's crap. It's almost always ludicrous. And on the off chance that it's possibly legitimate, you know, you should call and contact the company yourself. You should actively do it. You should never passively give someone information.
Right, and email is definitely one of the worst too. Even if it you know, even if there were some legitimate reason to contact you about it, they wouldn't do it via email. They would do it via voice. They would do it via snail mail. They would do it some other way, because with other methods and techniques out there, like man in the middle, stuff like this,
they can sniff it.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, come on. AOL's got your credit card billing information, your telephone number. They have all sorts of other information. Do you really think they're going to email you to ask you for account information? No, of course not.
Right. I mean, somebody could have gone to the site and initiated a please change my password, please send my information.
Yeah.
And it's legitimate. It'll come from that site. It wasn't you that requested it, but when you reply to it or you send a new password or you change it or whatever, they just sniffed it to get the email.
Yeah.
Now, that's kind of going away from phishing, actually, I guess.
But it's the same concept of, so phishing is you basically mass send out emails. You know, back in the day on AOL, we would instant message people. AOL was so stupid because they actually had, so like when you signed on for an account, they dumped you into the new user's lounge, which also was known as the pool to fish from.
Right, the fishing pool.
Here are a bunch of new users that don't know doing. But normally it's a mass email or a mass instant message to a buttload of people, and they're playing the numbers game, like spam. They're like, you know, 1 out of 1,000 people is going to be stupid and email me back, and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
And they're just trying to get access to your account, credit card, something like that.
Yeah, those are spammer odds right there, but that's all they want. 1 out of 1,000, they're happy.
All they need.
Yeah.
So.
So, yeah, that's just not... And let me just correct something you said, too. You said AOL was pretty stupid. No, AOL is still pretty stupid. I just want to make sure we clarify that. AOL is suck.
They don't have a new user's lounge.
They don't have that anymore, but they suck for so many other reasons. We could go on a whole show about that. AOL has always sucked. They suck now, and they always will suck.
Yes.
So, I just wanted to throw that out because I love saying that over and over again, how much AOL sucks.
Yes, AOL does suck. Yeah. How much email do you get from people from AOL addresses going, please tell me how to hack?
Oh, I just ban anything that's AOL.com. I just block it. No, I don't really. But anyway, and the other thing about phishing too is, yeah, there are some proxies and stuff that people can use, and there's ways to make it a little bit safer. But you know what? If they go totally from proxies and temporary accounts and stuff, they don't get the results they want.
No.
Most of these emails, they want you to submit this information back to them. They're going to redirect you to a website, or they're going to want you to reply to the email or something, but they do have to get information back. This does have to be a two-way street, two-way communications, because spammers, they can send you something. They don't need to hear back from you. They just want you to go to buy something, their website. They don't need you to reply to the email, so it's usually coming from fake addresses or accounts that have been compromised, etc. But for phishing, they need you to get information back to them somehow, so they make themselves accessible intentionally, albeit maybe temporarily.
Yeah.
So, obviously, that means that this is something that's very, very easily traced and very easily found out. So, it's a very dangerous game to even be involved with, and I don't really know why people would get into this or what's the... I don't know. That's a whole different breed of person that really is into that for, I guess... Well, whatever their goals are, I can't even... I guess I could speculate, but I won't.
They want to steal lots of money. It's no different than robbing someone.
It's not. It's exactly what it is. And that's the one that they'll be on the news as hackers, too. But anyway, that's a whole other thing. The other thing, though, is that once this is found, it's easily stopped. Because these are canned messages that are sent out to everybody. Once one of them's flagged or enough people flagged it or complain it, all they do is go to the mail server and delete them all, cut them all off.
Yeah.
It's very easily fixed as well. So once some people report it, once it's found out, it's usually cut off pretty quickly. And that apparently is, I did not confirm this with the Google case or the Gmail case specifically, but apparently they took interest in it really quickly, and I assume that's exactly what they did. And actually, at the top of this particular email, it says, quote, "The Gmail team is proud to announce that we are offering Gmail free invitation packages to the existing Gmail account holders. By now, you probably know the key ways in which Gmail differs from traditional webmail services, searching instead of filing, a free gigabyte of storage, messages displayed in context as conversions." Now, that was the text at the top of it. And then beneath it, it has, fill in the name of someone, or give the email address of someone you want to have a new Gmail account. Now, again, as the way Gmail works, for those people who don't know, the way Gmail works is right now it's still not completely open to the public. You have to be invited to have a Gmail account. So a certain number of people were invited to in the beginning, and those people were given certain invitations to spread around and invite other people. And therefore, you know, pay it forward, how that branches out exponentially and how many more people. So there's a lot of Gmail invites out there. They're even being sold on eBay, which is pathetic, but people want this gigabyte of storage. Well, everybody wants more invites because of that. It's still limited. So, to stand back and look at this from a, I guess, an appreciation standpoint, you know, of at least how they did it. First of all, the message at the top that I just read to you, that sounds very professional. It's grammatically correct. It looks legitimate. Its spelling is well done.
Yeah. It's not from Nigeria.
Right, right. And so many of the phishing that I've seen in the past is always screwed up grammar and spelling, and it's an immediate giveaway.
Because
immediately.
They're not Americans.
Second of all, it'll have a bunch of animated GIFs or stupid little corny, you know, GeoCities graphics, I call them.
Yeah.
You know, those real corny ones that's, like, obviously not from the company anyway. Some of them try hard to get better-looking, more legitimate-looking graphics. They'll even steal them from the website themselves, but...
This was also, you know, again, not that I endorse, you know, phishing at all.
No, but we can respect this from a... I'm looking at this from a social engineering standpoint.
Respecting it from an art, they also, social engineering-wise, they picked a topic and a hook, so to speak, that makes sense. I mean, Gmail has worked for you being able to, or by having invitations, people get invited to join it. It makes sense for Google to say, oh, since you're a part of this, you know, we're issuing, you know, invitations, who would you like us to invite? I mean,
exactly. I mean, this could have easily been less successful if it would have said something like, we're going to pay $1,000 to you if you give us your friends' names. Now, see, that makes it look obviously fake. They went with a realistic gift, a realistic reward, and that is an intelligent social engineering move.
Yes, very much so.
And, yeah, that's exactly what I mean by appreciating. There is some beauty here. There is something to appreciate from the social engineering standpoint. It is well done as far as the way they approached it.
Yeah, it's a
they
good
don't, there's no Nigerian scam. There's no pyramid things. There's no we're going to give you money. There's no... You know, they're saying, we're going to give you more invites. Everybody wants more invites. We know that that's what Gmail's about, so they absolutely did that very well. And again, the most important thing on top of that is spelling and grammar, because that's the second giveaway. You know? A, giving away something that's unbelievable. B, the grammar and spelling is atrocious.
Yeah. It would be interesting to find out how many people actually got nailed by this.
Yeah, and I wonder if they will ever release that information anyway. Or is that one of those things they'd be ashamed to mention?
Was it replying back to, like, a Gmail address? I mean, I'm sure... Was it something that Google could have shut off? Or
it was. It's probably not the best idea to give that out on the show, though.
Okay.
But yes, it was to an account. And actually, I am going to touch on that in a second. Let me come back to that one.
Okay.
Again, from a social engineering standpoint... I mentioned how important graphics were. Well, this one, and Gmail in general, is not graphic intensive.
No.
The few graphics that they had are really more along the lines of font and font consistency and color schemes. And the way this email was put together, they used everything that matched the Gmail interface and the Gmail website. So it looked like, because it matched with it, it makes it that much more believable that it really is from someone there. You know, and the email address, like you said, the email address does sound legitimate. And again, I'm not going to read it, but, you know, if you saw something from webmaster@gmail.com, you know, that lends credibility as opposed to bob6472@gmail.com saying the same thing.
Mr. Kitten's at.
Yeah.
Hotmail.com.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, especially if it's coming from a different site, another Hotmail, you know, from Hotmail. That would definitely give it away, too. So I don't know if this is really a Gmail... I don't know if I would say maybe Gmail needs to put more graphics. I don't think I kind of thought that at first, but I don't know if that's really the case. They might need to do something to distinguish themselves a little bit so they're not so easily spoofed or duplicated here or ripped off.
Yeah, but, I mean, you look at anybody who commonly has phishing or scam. I mean, eBay, right? eBay is covered with crazy fonts and graphics and all sorts of stuff. But you have, like, these people setting up websites in Russia, that and the URL will be, you know, www.ebay.com@RussianWebsite.com. And they will just jack, you know, they'll use WGET or something, and they'll just take all the graphics straight from, you know, eBay. So it doesn't really matter how good or you distinguish yourself. If someone's going to spam you, they can just take it.
Right.
I mean, it's not like those things are signed or encrypted. I mean, anyone can take them and use them.
Yeah, and you know what? I also... Now, to come back to what you said about the address.
Yeah,
certain addresses are more believable than others.
Mm-hmm.
I'll admit right now that I went out and registered a few Gmail names. That they could very easily fool people with phishing. I was surprised that they made them available. For example, webmaster@gmail.com was not available. You know, that one they obviously took care of. But there were some other things that were similar to that that could be believable. You know, webmaster was not available, admin was not available, administrator, etc. But there are some things that could look pretty darn close to real, or look pretty believable to that out there. And I registered a couple just for the knowledge, just for the fun factor of it.
Yeah.
And like, I sent a couple of emails to some friends as a joke. You know, that's really the only reason. I would never use them for what these other people are. You know, but it is kind of funny in a joking novelty sort of way, not as a, you know, a real phishing account or a real attacking, you know. It's all about, you know, they made it, first of all, that they made these addresses available. They allowed somebody to register this address. So, you know, maybe they should have had a little bit better filtering on what names they made available. You know, maybe they should not have let anybody have any sort of name with the construct ADMIN. Maybe they shouldn't have made that available in any way, shape, or form. No admin 1, no 31337 admin online, you know, nothing with admin in the title.
Yep, it's like AOL back in the day. You couldn't have a username with guide anywhere in the name.
Hmm.
But people would, of course, spoof it by having like a number 1 for the I or something.
Right, and that's my, you know, a perfect pimp of my article on elite speak, and that's exactly where it comes in and where it can be used.
And people read it real fast and they don't notice it.
Yeah. So. Yep. Now, this is all well and good. You know, we talked about phishing and what it is, which, you know, to a certain extent, I mean, a lot of people know this. We're addressing it in an organized fashion here to talk about it and as it applies to this specific case with Gmail. But here's a much, much bigger point that I want to bring up. Gmail is doing something that other places have done as well, and we talked about it before, actually, on, let's see, it was episode 14, I think. Yeah, episode 14 of Binary Revolution Radio, where we talked about single sign-on, okay, or any type of single point of authentication. And this is something that Google is doing now. When you have an account with Gmail, it's not just a Gmail account. That's a Google account that you may also have access to Google Groups or Google Answers or any of the other Google services. But you only log in once to get to any and all of them. So when you give up this account, when you give up that information, and these fishers or these people, fishermen, is that a proper term? I've never heard that before. These fishers or these fishermen or fisher people, to be gender in specific.
Or equal opportunity.
Exactly.
We need more female hackers.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to give you a big fat amen to that one. It is absolutely very dangerous. Even though it's simple, even though it's something that only 1 in 1,000 or even 1 in 10,000 fall for, you know, most people are, for the most part, it is still a very, very big threat.
And it's huge because not only does this one password and username have access to it, I bet your username at eBay or at Amazon or at Hotmail, I bet they're all pretty similar. And I bet your password is probably the same.
Exactly.
For the longest time, I used the same name and the same password at all of these websites until I really stopped to think about, wait, what the hell am I doing? So you better believe when somebody fishes you, they're going to all the major sites like Barnes & Noble, and they're trying variations of your name, probably your name and your birth date at the end, or your account number, trying to, you know, get into these sites too. And it does not stop. Because think about it. So you're like, oh, what, great, someone can get my email. No. Not only did somebody just get your email, which they then scanned for, you know, well, God only knows what you have in there, personal, you know, access information, credit card numbers, even telephone numbers. But now they just got into eBay, and so they just did a lot of bidding for you, and they just got into Amazon. And, you know, you check that nice little fun box that said, you know, remember my credit card number and my shipping location. So they just got your address. And this is how identities get stolen. I mean, you start building this information about someone, and you can start applying for credit cards, you can start applying for driver's licenses, you can do all sorts of nasty shit.
Yeah, it's an excellent, excellent point that I really didn't think about going off on that tangent, but it's an excellent point. And this is, again, why hackers have been saying for years. I mean, this is one of those bread and butter things. We count on and we know damn good and well that people do exactly that. You create the same name or a similar name at email, but you probably have the same password because you're lazy.
Yeah.
You know, it's a fact of human nature.
Yeah.
People are lazy and they will use the same password for multiple things. So if you know that somebody's got accounts on other systems, you're going to find a same or similar password.
You know, I to pimp something here, not anything in specific, but people have created applications to combat this very thing. They're normally called password wallets, something like that. And it's a program on your computer which will let you randomly generate a username and a password. And, like, as close to actually what quote-unquote random is, I mean, I don't want to get into a mathematical...
Right, well, based on time and all that.
They will have essentially an application, and you lock it with a single password. And it will let you generate random usernames and random passwords. So when you go to Amazon.com, you just open your program, click a button, and it fills in your username and password. You don't have to know what they are, and they're going to be nice and random. And they're so if somebody manages to get into one of your accounts, they can't get into all of the others. Now, of course, if someone steals your laptop and is able to crack your wallet, then you're screwed because they've got them all anyway. But it's a nice little abstraction, and... it's a nice thing if you're like, well, I want to be secure, but I don't want to have to remember 10 different usernames and 10 different passwords. No, you only have to remember one, but traveling in the wild are 10 different ones.
Yeah, and there's one other thing about those that's very, that's just not good for me personally, and I presume a lot of people, and that is, you know, I may be on 20 different machines in a given week.
Yes.
You know, and that's no exaggeration. I'm easily on a dozen. You know, so you can't really carry that around and install it because it's going to have different... That becomes a logistical nightmare. If you're at home on one computer, that's great. You order everything from the same computer, that's perfect for something like that.
But, of course, but, if you're using 20 different computers to buy stuff from Amazon.com...
Well, that's true.
A bad thing, too.
But, I mean, as far as using it for general passwords for, like, sites, not necessarily buying... But just as your centralized password thing. However, I mean, this is something else I also wanted to mention, too, and that is that application is theoretically, under the same exact scenario, you get one password, that single sign-on, you have access to all the rest of the person. So if that somebody had physical access to your box...
Yeah, you're screwed.
...and knew it, then you're screwed. However, this is exactly the point that I wanted to bring up. Single sign-on... is incredibly, it's a great thing. Don't get me wrong. It is a very good thing and very useful and handy. And this password keeper is kind of a derivation of the, it's a similar idea.
Yep.
But it's very useful in internal networks.
Yes.
And internal applications and local stuff where you also have to have physical access to the computers.
Yes.
Then you have a whole nother layer of security. Physical security is a layer of security. I don't care what anybody says. Physical security combined with network security is the ultimate solution. So when you have to require somebody to be inside of your network or your office or something like that, you have a lot more control. Obviously, the bigger companies, you can't keep track of everybody, and that's where, you know, a lot of people try to get in. I guess a lot of the real... it's nothing to do with hacking, but that's what a lot of thieves will do. They'll break into buildings and get physical access to computers and stuff like that. And that's because it requires physical access.
Yep.
And that is a very, very valid... My point on that is single sign-on can be very useful. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. It just has to be deployed right. And any type of single sign-on or single point of authentication of any type... over the internet is always going to be dangerous. You have a higher level of danger because you no longer have physical security layer in place.
Like, look, the prime example of real online thing was Passport.
Right. Like, and yeah, back on episode 14 of Binary Revolution Radio, which is how long ago? We're on 63. We went into the whole episode was about that very thing, Microsoft Passport. And their single sign-on and the potentials, pitfalls of that.
And people have been cracking that pretty much since... people have been cracking that pretty much since it's been deployed, so...
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's just not... it's not quite ready yet. It's just not secure enough yet. So, anyway, there's a balance there somewhere, and
the balance between between convenience and security.
Yeah, and there always has been, and there always will be, and it's just a question of somebody has to draw some lines. And I guess that's really all I have to say about fishing and this particular case. This case was just a platform for us to talk about fishing and some of the logistics of it and how it works and some of the pitfalls and stuff of it. And I think we covered it pretty well. Is there anything else we probably missed?
Well, don't do it.
I know what. You actually, maybe you can talk the consequences.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, granted, if AOL ever comes and tracks me down and asks me about it, I'll completely deny it. But I did it a time or two on AOL back in the day when I was a teenager. But the consequences of it, especially if you're using it to defraud, steal identities, is huge. I mean, first of all, as soon as you email someone saying, "Hi, I am such and such from tech support," you know, you're misrepresenting yourself. You're getting stuck. There's all sorts of, if you're misrepresenting,
impersonation.
Say a financial banking officer, I believe that.
Right, impersonating certain people is...
are felonies.
Right.
And so immediately you're in federal, you're in federal area. If you're sending it to people across, you're going across state lines. There's a felony, which pretty much you can always assume. Anything you're doing over the Internet, you're going across state lines. Even if your ISP is simply across state lines and it's coming right back into your state, you've got, fraud. As soon as you use a password you get from phishing, you violate the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act because you're accessing a system that you do not have access to. It is just, it's nasty. You certainly should not do it. I'm glad to see the U.S. government and passing some of these strict laws because identity theft, it's only going to get worse as more people get broadband, more people are hopping online. Like everyone and their grandma is on the Internet now, and that's what they're preying on. They're not preying on you and me. They're preying on, you know, your family that's in town visiting, Sally in accounting who will run anything you ask her to run. I mean, you're always going to have those types of people, and the only thing you can do is try to educate them.
Right. Absolutely. Now, I think that is probably about all we can talk about. Now, speak up here. We're going to close out.
Okay.
I guess, yeah, let's skip. I mean, we've got a full show right there, and I do think we covered that pretty well. And, yeah, the consequences far, far outweigh the risk far outweighs the reward in this case. And the reward is subjective. The reward of, it's not something that most white hat hackers, most moral hackers, most hackers that abide by the hacker ethic would not want or need as a reward anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so the risks far outweigh the perceived rewards in this case. Of course, that's just my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, what the hell are we going to do with credit card numbers? I mean, we already have jobs. I mean, we don't really need that.
Yeah, that's that other, misperception that we're all, on welfare or something, or we all, don't have our own money. I mean,
exactly.
Not rich by any means, but I pay bills,
Yeah.
Anyway, let's close out here. Let's jump to our shout-outs. And actually, I already started one earlier, and that was shouting out to Kizzle. Go check out hackermedia.net. Central place where you can look up all these different shows. People will post when they've got a new version or a new episode of the show available, so you can find it all in one spot and the links to download it and stuff like that. Very cool idea, very well implemented by Kizzle, so big shouts to him. And some shouts to Black Ratchet. This is a guy who's come to the forums fairly recently, and he's just been working on projects that are just fun stuff. I like anybody who's actually producing something or working on a project, no matter how big, no matter how small, and he's had a couple projects that I've liked, where he just says, I just want to do this to see if I can, or I just want to do this for the fun of it, or I want to do it because no one else has done it, or I see the need, or I see a gap. Anybody that's producing something and actually going out and trying things, I give absolute big credits, big shout-outs to people like that, and Black Ratchet is one that I've noticed lately has really taken to that and tries things. So big shouts to him as well, and I know this is probably unnecessary, or I'm sure they get a lot of shouts and and pats on the back, but the Firefox and Thunderbird project teams,
Oh yeah.
You know, Firefox is just awesome. It really is a great product, stable. I got to say, I just updated to 1.0 PR, and I'll watch it over time. I was starting to have a problem with the 0.93, I think it was, where it was really draining some memory. I'm not sure why, but since I've gone to 1.0, the PR, it seems to be okay now. So, it's even when it was using some memory, it's still less than Internet Explorer does. It's still a good project. So, definitely shouts to those guys. Big thumbs up to that. And go ahead, your open floor. Take it away.
Well, I definitely have to give props to Botburn. I'm going to enjoy seeing this talk up at Freaknik. I have to give props to Dolomite, who's the organizer of Freaknik. I'm sure he's been sending emails, you know, keeping the speakers up to date, you know, telling us about their filming. They're showing it over the hotel closed circuit television, all the talks. They videotape them. There's a great group of guys up there in Nashville that put on the conference, so props to them. I'm looking forward to it. That's about it. Certainly, yeah. Props to you, Stank, for having me on the show again. It is far too long. I need to be back more often.
Oh, we'd love to have you back more often. Well, I'd love to have you more involved in a lot of things, actually. And like I said, we you know, I called you out in California. I mean, we talk about a lot of good stuff, actually.
Oh yeah,
definitely good stuff. And yeah, well, we got to come up with something. Well, I guess we'll have to take this off the show. We're gonna have to come up with something good up in Nashville. I'll have to bring the video camera, if you know what I mean.
Oh yes, okay.
So we're gonna have to come up with something for that. Email if you have feedback on the show. As usual, you can always email us at radio@benrev.com. Our closing music today, there's actually this guy, he goes by Brad Sucks. You can go to bradsucks.net. He's one of my favorites. I've closed the show out with him quite a bit. And someone has done a cover of one of his songs. Someone goes by the name of Henrietta, and she did a cover of his song called We're Not Friends. And I think this is just a really, really cool song and a really good cover. I like the original. I think I like the cover even more. So I'm going to close with this. Great, great. This guy really writes a lot of good stuff. And also, I'm not going to do this regularly, closing quote or anything, but I did stumble across a quote this week. I stumbled if I could type. I stumbled across a quote. I was reading a book on cyber ethics. I sometimes randomly pick up books and read them. Reading a book on cyber ethics, and I found an interesting quote written at the top of one of the chapters, and I wrote it down. I was so interested by it, and I'm going to just share it because last week we talked about law. We talked about the leak hackers and the law and how it affects them, and we talked about DMCA and some of that stuff. Well, this is a comment to me that's very profound if you really think about this. And this is a quote from David Post, professor of law from Temple University. And he says, quote, "If 7 million people are stealing, they aren't stealing." And I'll let you guys interpret that and read into it what you will.
I like that.
It's so profound in such a simplistic way because you know what? There's something bigger than... You know what? I'm not even going to explain it. I will let people interpret it as they will.
It's a show for another time. You know, all about the business model of the RIAA, MPAA, and whether it's horribly outdated or not. That alone is a show.
If 7 million people are doing something wrong, it's not wrong. You know? That could be a... Anyway, yeah. So, we have really smart listeners. I'm sure they know exactly what that is, and they'll take it for what it is.
On some interesting levels, what with, you know, the constitutional amendment that Bush is pushing. I mean, it can apply to lots of stuff, I guess.
Yeah, I'm a firm, true constitutionalist myself, so. Anyway, yeah, that could go into a whole other thing. We're going to wrap the show up. This was another great show. I thank you very much for being on the show again. I do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And, we're going to do this as often as you're ever in town. If you're ever around long enough to be still for 5 minutes. But for now, we're going to have to wrap it up for this week and tell everybody that we will see them again next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.